Sorry, we don't have any intro music because we suck. But here we are with first and 96 with Forrest Ends. We tried to do first and 5 or first and 10. It didn't work out because Forrest's picks were so bad. So now we're going to preview the AFC East since the draft preview was...
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I think.
So, are we starting now?
Yeah, we're starting now, man. It's your show. You're running the show.
All right.
I'm just a sidekick guy. I'm Mr. Ray. I'm just going to sit here and look at bad pictures.
So, I'm going to start with the New England Patriots.
Why is that? Is that because they're the best team in the AFC East this year?
It's because they're my least favorite team.
Oh, all right.
If I was going in order of favoritism, my order would be different, though. It's just the order my notes are in.
Oh, okay. Forrest has about 26,000 pages of notes he's been furiously writing all day.
All right, so I have two records for every team except for the Dolphins because the two records that I wrote were the same. But before looking at the schedule, I made records for everybody.
Right.
And before I saw the record, I gave the Patriots an 11-5 because I think that's where their talent is at. But they have a really easy schedule. So once I looked through the actual schedule. I counted up the wins and losses, and I ended up with 12-4. So for the Patriots, I have a player of emphasis that I really want to share, and that's Chris Hogan. A lot of
former Buffalo Bill, Chris Hogan.
Yep, a lot of people underestimate him, but I mean he's going to be a vital part of this offense this year with all the
great possession receiver.
Yeah, with all the wide receivers that they lost, and with Julian Edelman being out the first four games, I mean. It's kind of terrible. I mean, their starting receivers this year is Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, and Eric Decker. So Chris Hogan is going to get a lot more catches than he did last year. So his stats from last year with 34 catches for 439 yards, a 12.9 average, and 5 touchdowns. I think this year that he's going to get 60 catches, 780 yards, with a 13-yard average and 8 touchdowns. Most of it coming from the fact that Julian Edelman is facing a suspension for the first four games. So he's going to probably be the number one receiver for 4 weeks. So I gave him a lot more catches, and I gave him pretty much the same average. He's really short and quick, and he's short, quick, and he has good route run. When I say quick, though, I don't mean fast, because he doesn't have a whole lot of straight line speed. But his movements are quick, which allows him to get open.
Got that shock. Bat, 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 bat. That's how you lose Forrest, because Forrest can't follow. He puts his hands on you. Bloop, here comes the flag.
He's a possession receiver, and he's good with short routes like slants and hitch routes. He can also go over the middle, though, and that's where some of his catches come from. And I think that this year he's gonna have less receivers to compete with as well, so he'll get more reps. Because with the Patriots, they like to rotate the receivers a lot. But this year, they don't have a lot of receivers to rotate, so Chris Hogan will, like, get more catches. So, also, I wrote notes for the two first-round rookies that the Patriots have in Sony Michel and Isaiah Wynn. So, Sony Michel...
Isaiah Wynn, I like the name of that. Wynn!
Sony Michel...
Any given Sunday... Sorry, keep going.
Sony Michel was one of the best running backs in the draft. And he was drafted there. And he has breakaway speed and really good vision coming out of the backfield. And he knows where the hole is. And then he's also very elusive and he's strong. He can break tackles. He can break tackles and have good stiff arms. And to be honest, he kind of reminds me of Shady. But he has less carries since he was behind Nick Chubb in college. Which I'm thinking might be a problem with his stamina. He might have a problem with his stamina since he wasn't a workhorse back in college and he didn't get 200 plus carries.
Do you think that might make him a better workhorse back because it hasn't taken abuse and damage?
No, I think that you always should have two running backs that you can work with. Because in my personal perspective, when you're on offense, I like to grind the ball and run the rock a lot, and I like that kind of football since it tires out the defense and wears out the defense. So,
you don't play like that, man.
Only when I'm down 14-0 in 4 minute quarters. But in franchise, I've been running the ball a lot. I have super low scores in all my franchise games. And I think that you should always have two running backs, because then your starting running back won't get really tired, because he has another back behind him that is also viable and can run for 4 yards a carry, which is mainly what's considered acceptable in the NFL.
So how's our defense? Or you still got more offense?
Yeah, I still have more offense.
Keep going. It's your show.
So for Isaiah Wynn, something that really caught my eye was that he caught a punt. He dropped the first one, but then he caught a punt in Patriots practice. I watched a breakdown of his game, and he has quick feet for a tackle, and he also his quick slide is also quick enough to deal with speed edge rushers. But he also knows how to deal with power rushers, and he just collides with them head on to block them. He also can move his hip square. He can also get his hip square even when he's running up to the second level in the run game. And he usually knows how to block his rusher, so he'll always have a pretty decent chance of winning that battle. The big losses for the Patriots this year are Malcolm Butler, Deion Lewis, Nate Solder, Danny Amendola, and Brandon Cooks. All huge losses. Malcolm Butler was their best corner, and he kind of won Super Bowl 49. Deion Lewis was a really good back for the Patriots, especially since they like to run multiple backs. He's really quick and elusive, and he was a big part of the Patriots offense, also catching the ball too. Nate Solder is probably one of the best tackles in the NFL, to be honest. And that's why he got such a big contract from the New York Giants. And he's going to be able to protect Eli Manning very well. Danny Amendola was a big target for Brady. On the offense, Danny Amendola got a lot of catches from the slot, and he was a fast slot guy that Brady used as a safety valve. And then Brandon Cooks was their fast burner athletic receiver. Without that, I think they're going to struggle this year in the passing game, since they don't have any athletic wide receivers. The big additions, though, are Adrian Claiborne, Jeremy Harrell, Jason McCourty, Cordell Patterson, and Danny Shelton. All five of those players are pretty good, and they're almost all on defense. Well, most of them are on defense. Adrian Claiborne is a really good rusher, and he got a pretty impressive strip sack the other day on Nick Foles, and he actually hurt Nick Foles' shoulder. So, yeah, and he's a really skilled rusher who can use his speed and power to get by the offensive lineman. Jeremy Hill is really interesting because he pretty much used to be the starter for the Bengals. And now, since he's on the Patriots, it's going to be interesting to see what they have in store for him in the offense. Jason McCourty is a pretty big addition. He's pairing up with his brother to try and get some plays going. And he's a pretty good corner. He's not like a bad corner that they're hoping gets better because of his brother. He's already a pretty good corner. Cordell Patterson is a really good return man, and he might bring a little explosiveness to the Patriots special teams, which would be really nice and convenient for any team. And then Danny Shelton is really good at taking up blockers. He's not so much of a rusher, but...
Did you say lockers or blockers?
Blockers. Oh, he can take up a lot of blockers.
That's pretty good. He doesn't take up a lot of lockers because people might be pissed off.
But
especially if he puts jock straps in them all. Sorry, we need a little dirty humor in this podcast. Keep going.
Yeah, it's very analytical. But he usually takes up two blockers, which would allow the edge rushers and the defensive ends to get by. So the Patriots might get a better pass rush this year. However, one thing on this defense that I think will affect them a lot is the loss of Matt Patricia, who's now the head coach of the Detroit Lions. Since the Patriots lost Matt Patricia, their defense is going to be so much different. They lost Malcolm Butler and Matt Patricia after the Super Bowl, which is going to affect this defense a lot, and I don't think that they're going to be the same this year until they can find a good defensive... So until they can find their rhythm on defense, which will probably be not until next year, this defense isn't going to be so good. Now, Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are the two biggest names on this team now. And Tom Brady is the greatest player of all time. He's not going to regress in skill at all.
You don't think so? He's getting old.
No, he's not going to regress in
skill. His girlfriend's really pretty and he's old and he might be thinking about things besides for football.
He's not going to regress in skill since he's already established himself as one of the best. And he's always been really good. And last year we were saying the same thing. Brady's old. He's going to regress. I think...
Sooner or later he will, though. You don't think this is the year he starts to regress?
He's going to have physical regression. But his skill at throwing the ball isn't going to change that much. He's going to drop in stats a lot, though, because he had so many big wideout losses that, I mean, he's going to have to find Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, and Eric Decker this year, which probably isn't going to be too helpful for his stats. Now, looking at Rob Gronkowski, he's probably the most athletic tight end in the NFL, but he really needs to stay healthy since he's the second most important receiver on the team at tight end. Gronkowski's biggest issue is that he couldn't stay healthy. I mean, he had 8 touchdowns last year. So he's a vital target for Brady. When he's injured, if he is injured, they're losing a big weapon, and that's 8 touchdowns down the drain for Brady that he has to somehow replace with his other targets. And the last thing worth going over for the Patriots is the running backs. The running backs, since we're probably trying to get Brady a lot better, since we're trying to get Brady better at 41, they're really important. They had 9 altogether. They had 9 receiving touchdowns last year, which makes up for a lot of the offense. So losing Deion Lewis isn't helpful, but they have backups in place like James White and Rex Burkhead and Mike Gillislee, another former Bill, that can...
I like him. He's pretty good. I like watching him run.
That can help the Patriots stay in the rush game a little bit. The New York Jets...
Hang on. So what do you think the Patriots are going to be offensively of the AFC East? First, second, third, or fourth?
They're going to be the best offense in the... Yeah, they're going to be the best offense in the NFC East.
No, AFC East.
I mean, AFC East.
Yeah.
Because, I mean...
All right, so the best offense, Pats.
Yeah.
So the best offense. Number one, oh. How about their defense? Out of just the AFC East, top on the AFC East.
It's kind of hard to decide, but I would say second.
Second D, all right. And what do you think their final record is going to be?
12-4.
12-4, all right. There we go, that's the Patriots. Right. Going to Super Bowl? Is anyone in the AFC going to Super Bowl?
No. All right. I don't think so.
No Super Bowl. All right. Jets.
So.
J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. Your turn to talk.
I know. My projected record for them with their regular schedule is 5-11.
Ooh, the Jets.
But I think they have the talent. I think they have the level of skill and talent that's needed to go 6-10. And
can I get a slice of that paper? Are you talking?
And to be honest, I think that they could be one of the better teams in the NFL eventually if they keep the roster pretty similar to what it is now. In 3 years, I mean, they could be going 9-7 with the same roster that they have in 2017. So, I mean, the Jets aren't bad, but they aren't good. They're really young and inexperienced. So, they're really young and inexperienced. So I don't know how good they're gonna be. Now for the Jets, there was a huge loss in DeMario Davis. I mean, he held down the middle. He was probably one of the best middle linebackers in the game. So his replacement is Avery Williamson, who's going to be decent but not great and not as good as DeMario Davis. So, I mean, that's a huge loss that the Jets didn't really make up for. Another loss is Coney Ealy, but I think that the Jets are actually going to be fine with this because the rest of their D-line is still pretty strong and can produce at a pretty average, above-average level. Chandler Catanzaro was an interesting loss. They lost their kicker in the first day of free agency, so that's just annoying and an inconvenience, and their kicker was pretty good, so it's a loss. And then Austin Seferian Jenkins was a weapon for Josh McCown last season. If you watch the games, I mean, Seferian Jenkins was open a lot. The problem, though, is if you look at his stats, you won't be able to tell that he was that good. He only scored 3 touchdowns, but he is pretty good, and they're going to suffer a loss of another weapon. So the thing with DeMario Davis is that he had 93 tackles, 5 sacks, a fumble recovery, 3 pass deflections, and 9 tackles for a loss. It's kind of hard to replace with anybody. I mean, that's a pretty elite season. And then the big additions for this team is Tremaine Johnson, Isaiah Crewell, Kerryo Santos, Avery Williamson, Teddy Bridgewater, Terrell Pryor. So Tremaine Johnson is a really good cornerback and will help Jamal Adams and Marcus May in the secondary a lot. He's a lockup corner who might not get a lot of picks, but the only reason for that is because he either gets more pass deflections or people just don't throw his way. I mean, he is a top corner in the NFL, and this secondary just got a little more real for the NFL.
Sounds like you're saying the Jets gonna have good D.
Yeah, they're.
Sounds like a bad year for the Bills to have a not good quarterback. Keep going. I'm sorry.
They're gonna have a good season, but I still have them going 1-1 with the Bills because I think that the Bills are better, but the Jets have a way of beating them, and they played the Bills a lot.
How about the Patriots? 2-0 against the Bills?
I think. I didn't write the schedules down. Right.
Just what you think they're going to do against the Bills. I don't care about anything else.
I think they went 2-0 against the Bills.
They did last year, but what about this year? I mean,
yeah, I think they're going to go 2-0 against the Bills. Pretty sure I had the Patriots going 6-0 in the division.
All right. Sounds good. Keep going. I'm sorry. I'm just writing down my review.
Yeah. And then Isaiah Crowell is a solid running back. He's going to have a good year next to Bilal Powell as well. They're probably going to share carries, but Isaiah Crowell is going to have, I think, a breakout year with the Jets. Maybe not a breakout year, but a better year than he's had before with the Jets. And he is probably going to get more carries than he did. Probably going to get, I would say, maybe 125 carries, maybe a little more, if they split evenly between him and Bilal Powell, which I think they should, since him and Bilal Powell are pretty much equal in talent and skill. And then Kerryo Santos is basically the replacement for Chandler Catanzaro, so they don't need the punter missing the field goal net. If you remember, that happened to the Chargers when Nick Novak went down. Their backup kicker or their punter was like right in front of the field goal practice net, and he missed the net completely. And then Avery Williamson is a decent replacement for DeMario Davis, but like I said, I don't think they're gonna be able to recreate what DeMario Davis did. Teddy Bridgewater's potential starting QB, and he's looked really good in the preseason so far. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they gave him a couple of regular season snaps. But he's in a tough competition with Josh McCown, who's been a steady quarterback for the Jets in the past two seasons, I think. And Sam Darnold, the very promising rookie out of USC. So I think he's going to struggle getting snaps and finding a place in the offense. But he might be a Case Keenum. He might be a Case Keenum-esque story where somebody gets injured or he gets traded somewhere, and he kind of becomes, and he gets the starting role and has a pretty decent season. And Terrell Pryor is a pretty decent receiver, but he had a down year last year. Terrell Pryor isn't going to strive at number one receiver, since he's just not a number one, built to be a number one receiver. He's built to be two or three, or maybe a rotational receiver. So if they use him right, Terrell Pryor is going to have a pretty good season. Robbie Anderson is another player that I wanted to focus on, and he has a really good 50-50. He's really good in a 50-50 ball, and he has really good trust with McCown. McCown would sometimes even have the confidence to throw in a double coverage to Robbie Anderson. That's just how good he is. He's a really fast burner, and he's actually pretty tall. He's really light, though, so, I mean, he's probably going to break a rib if somebody touches them.
Do you have that in your notes?
No.
Uh-huh.
But he's like a stick. He's like 6'3", 190, which is a stick by NFL standards. And he has steady hands and a good release. So he doesn't have a good I don't think he has a good release per se, but he has really good moves. He has really good moves to get separation from the corner. And he's good in the open field as well, as he can make moves and get to the end zone. And it looks like that you need to say something funny before we bore our audience to death.
I'm just teasing you.
He's definitely
funny. That wasn't funny. Keep going.
He's really good against zone coverage, and in his 2017 stats, he had 63 catches for 941 yards, 7 touchdowns, and pretty much a 15-yard average. If McCown is the starter, Anderson will have a breakout year. However, he faces a possible suspension from 2 arrests earlier in the year.
Why do these guys keep getting arrested, man? What's up with the NFL?
Why
are they bad people? Why do you watch this sport with bad people? I'm just kidding. Football's awesome. Keep going. Bad people.
Sam Darnold is probable that he won't start all 16 games because Bridgewater and McCown are pretty much in front of him on the depth chart, but I think that eventually he'll start. Notes on Sam Darnold include ball security when moving in the pocket. He slides to avoid contact if he knows that there's potential for a hit. He's really good at bootlegs while protecting the ball, and he's good at escaping the linebacker. And he's good at escaping the linebacker that usually ends up unblocked. And he's good at anticipating where the receiver will be when he throws. He can also square shoulders when he's bootlegging to the left. Since he's a right-armed quarterback, he has to square shoulders, but he's really good at it. And he sees defenses and usually knows who's open. Overall notes is that the 3-4 defense could get the Jets' young players in trouble in the front seven. In a 3-4 defense, there's a lot that the linebackers have to do. They have to zone cover. They have to be in zone coverage. They have to be a spy. Sometimes they have to blitz. So when they're checking in and out of plays, I'm not sure that the young players will be able to be good in the 3-4. And in 3-4 defenses, it has to be executed really well for anything to even work. But the front seven is pretty strong.
Sounds like they have good corners, too, from what you said. Should be a pretty decent defense, I think.
They have a good secondary and a safety tandem that will eventually become the best in the league, in my opinion. And they have two other decent cornerbacks, and they have a very strong middle of the field.
All right, so what do you think they finish offensively in the AFC East?
In the AFC East, second.
Second in the AFC East?
Yeah.
All right, how about their defense? AFC East.
In the AFC East, what are the Patriots?
You have the Patriots as number 2.
Number 3.
All right, number 3 defense. All right.
Actually, can I change that around?
Yes.
Can I put the Jets at 2 and the Patriots at 3?
Yes. Jets at 2, Patriots at 3. You got it, sir. It's your show. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
But I'm holding you accountable at the end of the season.
Okay.
What do we do first in 2010? All right, the Dolphins?
Yeah, moving on to the Dolphins. My projected record with the regular schedule and their talent level record is both 3-13. I think they're probably going to be the worst team in the AFC East this year.
How'd they go against the Bills?
0-2. They're 0-6 in the division.
All right, 0-2.
And then I think most of it is probably going to come from Ryan Tannehill being bad. He just came off an ACL injury, which is going to probably going to change up his running game a lot. And losing Jay Ajayi and Jarvis Landry and not being in the game for a long time is going to affect his chemistry with the wide receivers and his ability to have trust in the receivers. So he's probably going to take a couple more sacks than he needs to. He didn't play at all last season. So the losses of Jarvis Landry this offseason and Jay Ajayi during last season, he has pretty much a completely new offense that he has to work with. And their big additions this year were Danny Amendola, Josh Sitton, Frank Gore.
Why did they pick up old people?
I don't know. They picked up a lot of old people.
Was it to sell tickets, you think? I mean, it's a big market.
What?
Do you think they did to sell tickets? A big market. They're marquee names. Or at least they were.
If they're trying to win, they picked up the wrong people. I mean, Danny Amendola is going to lose a step soon. Josh Sitton is eventually going to have to retire. So he's not going to be... Or move on. So he's not going to be there for more than 10 years. Probably for more than 5 to 10 years. And then Frank Gore had a good career, but I think it's pretty much over and he needs to hang up the cleats, like, right now. But they also added Mike Gesicki, Jerome Baker, Minka Fitzpatrick in the draft. And then they drafted Robert Quinn, the pretty good defensive end from L.A. From the L.A. Rams. So, yeah, their pass rush is going to be really good. They still have William Hayes and Cameron Wake. So adding Robert Quinn to the mix is going to really help their chances on the defensive line. Their big losses were Jarvis Landry, Marquise Pouncey, Duma Kongsa, Lawrence Timmons, and Julius Thomas.
How'd you learn how to say the guy's name, Duma Kongsa?
That's how the people say it.
Would you watch, like, SportsCenter all day?
I used to watch NFL Network all day. Now I'm watching ESPN if the normal shows are on. So Jarvis Landry's a big loss. I mean, he was their steadiest receiver, and he was their main touchdown getter, if that's a word. It's not, but...
Stephen Baker, touchdown maker!
Yeah, but he...
That's old school New York Jets.
He got the most touchdowns on the team.
I think it was the Giants. My bad. Stephen Baker was on the Giants. I messed up.
He got the most touchdowns, the most receiving touchdowns. He was the steadiest receiver in the receiving core, and he was...
Sorry about the squeaks.
He had the most touchdown talent. He had the most touchdown probability in the wide receiving core. I can't say that he got the most touchdowns in the receiving core because I didn't check that, and it'd be really embarrassing if somebody fact-checked me on that. Marquise Pouncey is another big loss.
Let me tell you something. If they listen this far, they're definitely fact-checking everything you're saying, just so you know.
And then Marquise Pouncey is a...
Wrong!
Marquise Pouncey is a very...
Sounds like a hamburger.
Is a big offensive line loss and...
Big juicy whopper. Sorry, that was for Mr. Ray.
And it's another loss that the Dolphins can't really afford. Even though they have Josh Sitton still... Even though they got Josh Sitton in the offseason... Again, Tannehill is going to be vulnerable, and with the knee, you're never sure. So, yeah. And then, Duma Kongsa was one of the best defensive linemen in the league, And losing him is pretty much the end of the defensive tackle talent on that team. And they're going to have a hard time replacing the second best defensive tackle in the league. Lawrence Timmons isn't a huge loss, but I mean, he basically held down the middle of the field with as a linebacker. And Julius Thomas is a big loss in the when you think about the name, but to be honest, he didn't produce that much for Miami last year. The defense has a good pass rush, and they have great rookies in Minka Fitzpatrick and Jared Baker. My notes on the rookies is that Gesicki is a great receiving tight end, but he's not that good of a blocker at all, really. And then Fitzpatrick is an all-over-the-field safety who's sideline to sideline and hits really hard. You can also move him around to cornerback, free safety, or strong safety, so he can pretty much line up anywhere as a DB, and sometimes they put him at linebacker as well in his college career.
He's too small for linebacker in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, he's tiny, but he's pretty big for safety.
He's big safety. That's a tough position to play, though. You got to really understand what's going on. We'll see how he does.
And Jerome Baker has really good tackling, and he hits hard. The wide receivers are okay.
Has he ever hit you?
No.
How do you know he hits hard?
Because he hurts people.
Okay.
And I don't think college athletes are softer than me.
I'm just teasing.
Okay. The wide receivers are okay, but that wide receiving core is getting worse without Landry. And there's also no clear-cut number one wide receiver. So the Dolphins will have to change around the way that the wide receivers play. So everybody's trying to get open rather than trying to get Landry open. Kenyon Drake is probably this offense's best hope at getting anything done. He had 4.8 average yards per rush and 7.5 yards per reception in his last season. His stats aren't really worth mentioning since they're not that much because he only played a few games. Due to the loss of Jay Ajayi, the Dolphins turned it into a running back battle between Damian Williams and Kenyon Drake. So Kenyon Drake pretty much lost, I guess, approximately 10 games. So he only started a good 6 games, which is not that good for trying to prove something with stats. He's a really shifty home run back, and he's fast. He can get away from the trenches, and at 6'1", 211, he's also just strong enough to break tackles, and he has a really good stiff arm.
That it?
Yep.
All right. Where do you see him placing in the offensive category?
4.
4? Helps if you're talking to the mic because no one heard that.
4?
4. That was really loud now. 4th on offense. Not so good. How about defense?
4th.
Wow. Not so good.
Nope.
4-4. All right. Now to the team that everyone's been waiting for. Your Buffalo Bills.
Yep. So this time the projected record and the talent-based record is a lot different. The realistic record is 6-9-1 based on the schedule, since we probably have the toughest schedule that an 8-8 quality team can have. My talent record is 8-8, like I was just saying.
What's your prediction?
My prediction is 6-9-1.
So that's your official prediction, 6-9-1. Who are they going to tie against?
The Tennessee Titans.
Oh, my God.
What? We have pretty much the same talent on our teams.
All right. So they're going to go 3-3 in the division then. Yeah. 2-0 against the Pats, 1-1 against the Jets, and 2-0 against the Dolphins. 3-3 in the division.
No.
Yep.
That's what 0-2 against the Pats.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I read it backwards because I have the Pats being 2-0 against the Bills. But no wins against the Pats, 1-1 against the Jets, 2 wins against the Dolphins.
Yeah.
3-3. My apologies.
QB isn't going to be good at all for the Bills since
Josh Allen's got a cannon, dude.
Since Josh Allen.
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Josh Allen is still developing, and right Touchdown. Now, I think that Nathan Peterman and AJ McCarron are probably
I like Peterman.
Really far ahead
of him? I think Peterman's going to be the starter.
Okay. But I also have that Nathan Peterman might surprise. There's a really low chance since the last time he started a full game, he threw 5 interceptions. But
pish! Anyone can throw 5. I could throw 5 interceptions anytime.
But I think based on his preseasons, he's going to be decent in the NFL, just not 9 and 10 for 100-something yards and a touchdown with no pick. Shady is going to have a big year, I think, because he has a new blocking scheme, and he has Chris Ivory to take some carries off, to take some carries off of his workload. I think that it helps that we got Chris Ivory, since Shady is not big enough to take all the hits, and he's not big enough to be a 3-down back. But looking for a word and I can't find it.
For what was the word going to be?
I think however.
However, I forgot the word.
However, he's really good rushing and receiving. The problem that presents itself is that he's just not big enough, not tough enough to take all the hits. I'm repeating myself, but
that's okay. I do that all the time. Joe Rogan makes a living doing that, so you're okay.
But like I said, he's going to be really good rushing and receiving. And when he does have the ball, I think that he's going to be awesome. He only had 6 TDs in 2017, which I think is going to go up by at least 2 touchdowns. And he's going to have a pretty big receiving year, since we don't have too many good receivers. Now, on the O-line, Deion Dawkins should progress, and the run blocking might help the entire O-line, as well as the new offensive coordinator. Russell Bodine might be okay, and then the rest of the offensive line is mediocre, at best for some of them. And then
they look good in the first preseason game.
Against probably not all the Panthers starters, since the Panthers have a strong defense, so I don't think that they would start their best players in a preseason game. And what if we go against, like, I don't know, the Jaguars? Yeah, we are going against the Jaguars. The Jaguars have the best defensive line, now the second best defensive line in the NFL, and I don't think our offensive line is going to be able to handle that. And we got so many holding penalties and so many false start penalties last year. With Richie Incognito, and without Richie Incognito, we're going to get even more. And
maybe he's a problem.
It's not going to get better.
Maybe he's messing up the signals all the time. That's why they always go off sides and hold. Go ahead, keep going. I'm sorry.
But we do have a new offensive coordinator, so if that was the problem, it should be fixed now. At tight end, Charles Clay and Nick O'Leary are both really good for their spots on the roster. Charles Clay's...
I just gotta say, when we play Madden, I had 3 touchdowns with Charles Clay against you.
I'm sorry, I play a lot of zone. Tight ends get open in zone.
I'm gonna say that he's gonna have a great year because Madden never lies.
Alright. Charles Clay and...
16 touchdowns for Charles Clay. I call it right now.
Charles Clay and Nick O'Leary...
That's my prediction.
Charles Clay and Nick O'Leary are both really good for their position on the depth chart. Charles Clay is a pretty decent blocker and a really good receiver, according to Pro Football Focus. He got high 70s in receiving, and his run block was usually about equal with his overall, with his receiving grade. So I think that he might also have a big year, since, like you said, you had 3 touchdowns with him. I think more of the reason you got 3 touchdowns with him is because we don't have any receivers except one.
You ain't lying. Zay Jones kept his pants on in our game, so we're all right.
And he didn't jump out of the game.
Yeah.
Break
through a TV, get cuts. Keep going.
Nick O'Leary's strength is his run blocking. His receiving probably isn't going to be so good because he's probably going to break his fingers since he doesn't have gloves.
I like that. Keep going. That was funny.
Nick O'Leary's probably going to get 20-30 catches for like 50 yards more.
Six catches.
With.
If he, when he breaks his fingers, not gonna be okay. He's dry. He has 28 drops.
He's gonna have 20 to 30 catches, and his yardage is probably gonna be a 10-yard average plus 50 yards. So if he gets 20 catches, 250. He gets 300 catches,
350. Right, yeah, 10-yard
catch.
Gotcha. Gotcha, sir.
Our receivers are Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, and Andre Holmes, and Jeremy Curley as the starters.
Curley. I like Curly Q fries.
That would be actually kind of good marketing for concessions at New Era.
Uh-huh. If he's good, that'd be great. We should coin that right now.
I know.
If I was the announcer, I'd already have that queued up to go when he gets a touchdown. And Curly Q's with a touchdown with a side of ketchup.
Kelvin Benjamin, I actually wrote notes for since he's pretty much the only receiver that deserves notes on our team right
now.
Zay Jones is going to progress, but not enough to where he's going to be an elite receiver. Not yet. Kelvin Benjamin is a big sideline target. He's 6'5", so Josh Allen's definitely going to find him since he lofts the ball like 100 feet into the air. And Nathan Peterman found him a couple times in the first preseason game, and he's pretty good down the sideline because he can catch it, and he's just fast enough to get like extra yards. And at the yard line that he catches it at, he usually is pretty close to the end zone. So 10 extra yards after the catch is pretty close to the end zone most of the time. Zay Jones jumped out of a penthouse and got arrested. And he was butt naked when he did it, so he probably...
He's got a nice butt. Everyone says he's got a nice butt. The girls like it. Maybe he did it to get some fame.
He probably won't start till later, and he was on the non-football injury list. Mm-hmm. I think he's back now, but I can't be 100% sure. Andre Holmes, if you remember him, he's the tall, skinny guy from last year that showed up occasionally. Yeah, number 18. He's probably going to get a lot more catches this year since we don't have any other receivers to make up for it. And Jeremy Curley should move up on the depth chart, but I'm not sure if he will. He's really short and fast, and he's probably going to get a couple drops, some open drops. And then after halfway through the season, he's going to be not dropping as many.
Is he going to get his hands fixed?
Probably. Yeah, but Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Andre Holmes, and Jeremy Curley are looking like the only starting receivers for the Bills. And Broad Streeter, Brandon Riley, and Robert Foster all have a pretty good chance of being backups. And they're all camp standouts right now. So it's going to be really interesting to see who makes the roster and who doesn't. But I think that those seven receivers, Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, Andre Holmes, Jeremy Curley, Rod Streeter, Brandon Riley, and Robert Foster are going to be our starters, and we might have to get rid of the guy who got hit in the head at the combine by a football.
I showed you that video like 20 times. That's so funny. Tunk! Oh. He finished the drill fine, though.
Yeah. So, give the Bills the number one defense.
I already did that because there's no one left. Number one defense, third in offense. My real question for you about the Bills is Josh Allen going to get in this year, and will it affect his development?
He's not going to get in until late in the season, and it probably won't affect his development because it already looked like we're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, but it's going to affect his confidence. Is he going to be all right developing?
I think if we don't start him at all this season, it might affect his confidence. And if we do start him, it might affect his confidence. So it's pretty much a lottery when you're doing that.
Okay.
I think he probably won't start till at least past game 14 because he right now is such an untamed arm that it's like not good if we start him. He probably is going to throw for like 5,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, and 100 interceptions. It would be really hard for him if he started, is the point. He doesn't have any guidance right now, and his talent is really raw, but he's definitely really good for the future, and he was worth the 7th round pick. The Bills' D-line is really good this year. We have Trent Murphy, Shaq Lawson, Jerry Hughes, Starla Tuele, and Kyle Williams and Harrison Phillips as pretty much our projected starters. We're going to be able to rotate Shaq Lawson and Trent Murphy, which is going to become a really good left end pair. And then Jerry Hughes is going to be way better at right end this year, since now we have two defensive tackles that take up the middle. Like, altogether, Starla Tuele and Kai Williams will probably take 3 to 4 offensive linemen up, because that's just going to be their job. And then behind him, the substitute for either of them, Harrison Phillips, is going to be a good rusher. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll actually be interesting to see what Harrison Phillips does, though, because his job might be to take up blockers, but I think that they need to, like, change that to attacking the quarterback. Since he was a former wrestler, so his handwork is really good, and he can get by the offensive lineman. At linebacker, let me bring up Trent Murphy's stats first. He had 9 sacks in 2016, which was the last season he recorded any stats. And the interesting thing is, it doesn't look like he was a starting defensive tackle, because he didn't have a whole lot of tackles. I mean, usually D tackles have 60 to 80 tackles, unless they're rotational. So I think
maybe he's not good at grabbing people.
I think that he's going to be an explosive
defense. Maybe everyone runs right by him.
I think he's going to be really explosive attacking the quarterback. But as you said, maybe he's not as good generally. So he's going to be good for our pass rush. Right now I'm making a prediction. Jerry Hughes is going to get at least 10 sacks this year.
I'm going to say he gets 26. Jerry Hughes, how many sacks are you saying?
At least 10.
10 sacks, Jerry Hughes? I'm going to say Hughes gets 22 personal fouls. Huh.
He would get ejected from almost every game.
I think 20 of them are going to be roughing the QB, and 2 of them are going to be for those helmet-to-helmet hits on the QB.
Oh, that's something we need to talk about. Helmet-to-helmet.
All right, let's go over to predictions real quick. Hurry up.
A linebacker. Right. Lorenzo Alexander is a good rusher on the strong side, but he's lost a step to other players since he's 35. Nothing against old professional athletes.
You were going to say fighters. You were looking right at me. You were going to say fighters.
I said nothing against them.
For anyone that does not know, I'm a professional fighter, and I'm old. And Forrest is throwing me under the bus.
Anybody 35 plus in professional sports usually has to find a different way to win. And smart people like you do find a way, and they become
sexy.
They become just as good or better than they were when they hadn't lost that step yet. So I don't know if Lorenzo Alexander will be able to do that, but I hope he returns to his 2016 form, since in 2016 he had 12.5 sacks. So that'd be really helpful if he could get 12.5 sacks again. Tremaine Edmonds, is the best inside linebacker from the 2018 draft. I think probably a little worse than Raquan Smith, but I mean, I think that's probably since he's only 20. And he's going to play for the Buffalo Bills at 21. But right now he's 20, I think, still. He had 109 tackles in his last year at Virginia Tech, as well as 2 pass deflections and 3 forced fumbles. He also gets into the backfield, and he's a really good tackler. So that equals a lot of tackles for loss. He's really fast, and he's a strong tackler who gets 2 hands around his opponent every time he tackles. He's not one of those guys that just leads with their shoulder and misses a lot. He makes sure he has his guy before he tackles them. Matt Milano is our weak side linebacker, and it's good since he's versatile. He's fast enough to get decent coverage, and he's good enough to know how to win in the run game. Tre'Davious White is our best corner, and he is one of the best corners in the league, and he should have been Defensive Rookie of the Year, in my opinion. And I really am mad that he didn't get it, since he had to go, I think, My personal opinion, I think he had to go against much better receivers than Marshon Lattimore did. And if you don't know who that is, he's the cornerback that got Defensive Rookie of the Year. He went against guys like, he went against A.J. Green, and A.J. Green got like 3 or 4 good catches, and then the rest of it was just shut down by Tre'Davious White in his rookie year still. In zone, he tracks the ball and he picks it off, or he tracks the receiver and he makes sure he tackles him. And sometimes he'll punch the ball out, like in the Adam Humphries situation, and how we won against the Buccaneers. And he's really good in 50-50s. And he's pretty good in 50-50s. And I think this year he's going to get 5 picks and 17 pass deflections. And I think that he's going to pick off, I think that we're going to pick off Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady at least once.
Some pretty lofty projections you got there, sir.
Vontae Davis is a very seasoned corner who is an extremely good man-to-man corner, and he's great on 50-50s. He's a really physical guy, and he makes sure he tackles you, and he hits hard. So I'm hoping that even though he might not be able to catch up to receivers, he'll find a way to get some of those picks and win some of those 50-50 balls for us. And if he gets at least 3 picks, I think that's pretty good. Because he's like 30, which is old for a corner. And yeah. In 2017, Micah Hyde was always in the right spot. He had 5 picks, and I think 3 or 4 out of the 5 of them were off tip balls. That is why Micah Hyde got all those picks. He's always in the right spot, and he knows when he's gonna be able to get the ball. He was pretty good in coverage as well, and in the Falcons game, he went man to man with Taylor Gabriel, and Matt Ryan tried to throw it deep, and he threw a deep pick to Micah Hyde. He moves around the defense, and he made some game-saving tackles. And finally, last but not least, Jordan Poyer is the other really good safety that the Bills have. He's a tackling safety, and he hits hard and gets decent angles. He can also blitz, and he's a physical player who creates plays. Last year, he had 2 sacks, 5 picks, a fumble recovery, and 95 tackles. He's a playmaker that's opportunistic and really embodies, and his stats really embody what the Bills' defense is. 11 to the ball at all times and getting every fumble, every pick that they possibly can.
So you're going to say the Bills are going to be the number one defense. You going to rank that on like yards or like turnovers?
Takeaways? That's not my answer. I think that they're going to be the best in yards this season and probably points allowed. I'm not sure about takeaways, though, because the Patriots' defense is still pretty good.
All right. So, to review everything, Pats 2-0 against the Bills. Number 1 offense in the division. Number 3 defense in the division. 12-4 overall record. No Super Bowl. The New York Jets 1-1 against the Bills. Number 2 offense. Number 2 defense. 5-11, though. No Super Bowl. The Dolphins, 0-2, 4th offense, 4th defense. Man, I wouldn't want to be a Miami fan. 3-13, no Super Bowl. The Bills, 3-3, with the 3rd offense in the AFC East, the number 1 defense in the AFC East, but they still end up with a 6-9-1 record.
One thing I do...
We projected that Clay will get 16 touchdowns because of my Madden use of him. You said that Hughes is going to have 10 sacks. And I said he's going to have at least 22 personal fouls. And he's going to look really mean while he does it.
If you want to know my Super Bowl projections, just to throw it out there, I think that it's probably going to be the Texans or the Jags. Yeah, the Texans or the Jags against the Rams or the Eagles.
Sounds good. Now get to your rule that you want. Let's close it off. Let's close off this whole podcast with what you think about the new NFL hit rule.
Well, there are three new rules, and all of them are kind of stupid. The helmet-to-helmet rule isn't exactly stupid, but it needs fixing to not be stupid. The new catch rules aren't stupid. They're actually better. I don't know why I said they're stupid. And then the new kickoff rules are just dumb.
Can you break down the rules? Because I don't even know them.
The catch rules are now that you have to have possession and take a third step.
Three steps now?
Yeah, and you have to be in bounds.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to make a football move, like a third step, a move, or like a reaching into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be in bounds, and you have to have possession of the ball.
Gotcha.
The new kickoff rules the main one is that you can't run up and get the ball on kickoffs anymore. You have to wait like it's a punt, catch it, and then run, which I think is stupid. Football is a high-impact sport. I don't think that they should change that. It's to protect guys, but, I mean, that's kind of the whole point of kickoffs. You're supposed to run into it. It's supposed to be high-impact. That's why usually you have a different guy that's not a starter returning your punts. So, I mean, don't change that. That doesn't make any sense. And the last thing is the helmet rule, which is so dumb. Which part of it is dumb, and then the other part is just that it's putting the refs at such a disadvantage that it becomes dumb. I can get why you wouldn't be able to use your helmet anywhere on the head, but I don't get why you wouldn't be able to use your helmet on any other part of your body. If you tackle wrong and you tackle head first, but your neck snaps back, that's your fault. You had the wrong tackle form. And, I mean, with your shoulder, you can pretty much deal worse damage to your opponent's body. So I don't know why you can't hit to the body with your head. And you still can't hit to the head with your shoulder. So it also puts the players at a disadvantage, because there are so many weird positions that if you're leading your shoulder with one guy and then another guy is next to him and you accidentally go helmet to body there, it's not really fair. And then it's also stupid for the refs, because the refs just can't see everything that's going on. They're going to make some whack calls, and like James Jones of NFL Network said, it's going to be a thing. This isn't direct quote, but it's going to be a thing where there's going to be an important game. The rule is going to come up, and it's going to mess a really important game up, like the tuck rule or something. And, I mean, that's the whole reason why Roquan Smith pretty much held out for so long, like almost into the preseason, is because of the helmet-to-helmet rule. I just think that they need to change the way that the helmet rule works, and they need to, like, have some way to make it easier on the refs to make decisions instead of having to guess and end up making a bad call.
Yeah, I've seen some really bad calls on Facebook where there's a shoulder and they still call the helmet. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a long season. But I bet you by the middle of the season they stop calling it so much. That's what usually happens.
I think by the end of the preseason it's going to be better. By next season it's going to be perfected. Or almost there.
All right, anything else?
The LA Rams are, I think, the best, most talented team in the NFL.
We're going to do that when we review the NFC. AFC West next, maybe?
If we're saving best for last, let's go West. Yeah, let's go West next.
All right. And for First and 96, your host, Forrest Denz.